Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had a million.
Well, and all banks, stocks, and jacks. Now, tomorrow, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 350. NASDAQ futures down 550. If we had a big bounce back day yesterday in the market, everything was up after Friday's and maybe in the last week's down week. So we're up yesterday. We'll see what happens the rest of this week. A couple of earnings today. UPS, ouch, down $11. That's 7.5%. Stocks 134. It was 208 like 3 years ago. It's unreal. Not every stock is up. You're the professor, Mr. Carl?
Oh, you do.
How are you, bud?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm doing well. It seems as though there's a bunch of people, though, that have had a bad few days.
Yeah.
Not just in the markets. You know, it's Cheeto, which is what she will forever be called by me at this point. Not Cheetah or whatever, Cheeto. If you bought any of what she was selling, you're in the wrong business.
I think we're going to go through the campaign. You know, we talked way too much politics yesterday, but I think we're going to go through the campaign without either side talking about anything that makes any difference to anybody. Just going to be hatred back and forth.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a sad reflection on America, isn't it?
Yep. I don't see any chance. I tried to get, I guess yesterday, to focus a little bit on what the talking points might be. And unfortunately, spent a lot of time this weekend with people on the severe right just going off on everything you listen to on this Newsmax, which is about the most...
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, it is disgusting to listen to it. And
well, it's about as bad as CNN.
You know, I don't catch the absolute hatred in every person's sentence on CNN that I see on this other thing. I really, well, you know, I know that both sides are
okay,
like
how
that.
About the View? Let's go a little
further. I don't watch that. CNN. When it's during daytime.
Yeah, well, there you go. Neither do I.
but the I guess with my you know, I know a lot of people. I don't know what the hell they do at home. Nor do I want to know. But I'd say I probably know 5, 6 to 10 people that are absolutely into this right wing, two stations on at the same time, plus a podcast, listening to every piece of hatred they can catch all day long. I really don't know anybody on the left, I'm sure there are, that is sitting there doing that with the same venom that some of these people on the right are.
You know, I know people on both sides.
You probably do. I didn't say there were any.
I'm saying I know people on both sides that are, you know, at that level of froth at the mouth sort of thing. And then I know a handful that are just stark raving nuts.
Yeah.
And the nuts thing actually scares me much more than anything else. Okay, I mean, I'll just give you, just throw one, you know, 10-second example out there. I know somebody who actually believes that the government, of course, we don't, you know, we civilians don't because we don't have that kind of money, but the government actually has bullets, not bombs, bullets that have GPSs in them and therefore couldn't miss unless it was intentional.
A GPS and a bullet. I mean, I think we have bombs that can do that about bullets.
Well, of course we have bombs,
yeah.
But I mean, you know, but you take, like, for example, the, you know, the much hated 223 round that goes in an AR-15, right? The mass, I have reloading supplies, not for that because it's not worth it, but you know, for some other rounds, okay. But as a result, I've got some of the components, the actual things that go into a round, right? The actual bullet that comes out of a AR-15 weighs about 4 grams.
Good enough.
Well, yes, obviously. Yeah. For, you know, as a bullet, right? However, you look at this tiny little thing that weighs 4 grams, and you say, wait a minute, you're telling me there's an antenna, a computer chip, a battery, right? And some means of, you know, where do they put the fins that, you know, that steer it, right?
You also got to put the person's name on it, like they used to think in war.
Then there's the other thing. And then on top of that, it somehow has to get a signal while it's sitting inside a barrel before it's fired inside metal, right? Because the however many single-digit milliseconds from the time that it comes out of the barrel until it gets to wherever it's going, it has to... You know, and by the way, this thing, a round coming out of a rifle barrel in a rifle is spinning somewhere in excess of 60,000 revolutions per minute.
Well, plus, don't you have to put something on the target person so that they can home in on them?
Well, you need a designator, right? So, I mean, yeah, with bombs, we point a laser at somebody, right? We point a laser at your car and the bomb blows up wherever the laser's pointing, right? That's where it goes. There's an awful lot of people out there, Chief, that think the laws of physics are suggestions. I guess that's the best way to put it, okay? And we do the same thing with a lot of the crazy stuff on the environmentalist side. I'm the first one to tell you the last thing I want is poisoned air and water, right? Because I've got to breathe it and drink it.
We all do it.
You got to be a special brand of nuts to want that. Right. Most of these people that are off the edge on this, in my experience anyway, are relatively young, and I think part of the reason that people like you and I are, I mean, you know, we may differ on some of the details, but we're not quite as crazy when it comes to such things, is that, and I can speak for myself. There was a river right near where I grew up. You couldn't eat the fish. You couldn't swim in it. It was disgusting.
By the way, are you doing your swimming thing in the Chicago River this year? Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
It's all right.
But on top of that, there was a chemical plant right near the house. It was maybe 4 or 5 miles away. But every time we went somewhere, we had to drive by it. Okay, because that's just the way the roads were laid out, right? Your eyes would water every time you went by this place. Right? That's how nasty it was. All that's clean now. You can see the bottom of the river. The fish are there. They're fine.
Did they ever clean the bottom of the river or not?
Over time, it gets encapsulated more or less. I mean, you'd probably be crazy to screw around with it, right? Because, you know, it's all in that sludge. Right?
I don't want to get off topic here, but... What would you ever do it like the Little Calumet or the Grand Calumet or something, if you actually wanted to, or the South Branch of the Bubbly Creek? I mean, would it ever be worth, you know, to use one of those rubber dams, pump the crap out, and once and for all clean the thing, or is it, you don't even want to touch it?
I don't know precisely what's in there, but my guess is it's pretty nasty. Right?
You know, bodies of cows and everything else. It used to bubble, hence the name Bubbly Creek.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, the thing that's, you know, there's the old saying that the solution to pollution is dilution. You know, that's the old one that, you know, used to
dilution, call it, dilution, right? Dilution.
Right. And the thing is that there's, it's not entirely true, but there's a kernel, like all stereotypes and all BS, there's a kernel of truth in all of it. Okay, and it's actually some of the reality behind that kind of thing is fascinating. I mean, it's, you know, one of the other the other things that goes around a lot is that, that we, by being impure in some way, have caused all the diseases that, you know, that humans suffer from today, whether they be cancer or whatever.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Well, I've pointed out to people, which makes them extremely uncomfortable, the entire reason we're all here is because of the same natural mechanisms that cause cancer, specifically cosmic rays and radioactive material on the Earth. And were it not for that, the diversity of the species in humans would not exist. And that's fact. And that is simply because mutation is caused by these things. Most of the time, those mutations are either harmful or deadly. But every now and then, you get magic.
Well, have you ever, since you like to read up on everything pretty much, I've always been fascinated here in Chicago with the, Chicago has really been, it's railroads, it's everything else, but it's really the history of water management because of the unique water, the ground here, the rivers here, the level, the locality, you name it. And when they first did the, you read more about this than you needed to know, but essentially, if you ran down to the river and dropped one in, shall we say, there's all kinds of little bugs just ready to eat what you just dropped in.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get 5 miles down river, guess what? It's not an issue, right? There's some question of how many people could drop in at the same time. But you can
always overload any system.
Yeah. But the thing that is amazingly dangerous and one of the worst things around, and I know people that used to get on the sewer either inadvertently or otherwise, was like the stuff that people used to use for antifreeze. I mean, there's nothing, was it ethylene glycol? There's nothing in the world that it eats that or wants it.
Well, the funny thing about ethylene glycol is that so many people mistake it and its cousin, which is propylene glycol. Okay. The propylene form of the chemical is essentially biologically inert. It's used in RV antifreeze because it also is an antifreeze. And people put it in their water tanks. You don't want to drink it, but it isn't going to kill you instantly if you do drink a small amount of it. And it's also in things like toothpaste. If you look at the label on your toothpaste. Okay, and in cosmetics, and it's safe for incidental consumption, right? I wouldn't recommend grabbing a bottle of it and quaffing it. But, and yet ethylene glycol, the ethylene form, because it's a different, it's a different molecule, the ethylene form is a serious liver poison. And the worst part of it is it also is sweet in taste, and so that's where the problem comes from, because if it gets spilled on the ground or whatever, animals will eat it, including, your dog or cat that comes up, your favorite pet comes upon it, because someone spilled their radiator or whatever have you, they'll drink it, and it's a serious liver toxin. So, yeah, it's also toxic to fish and everything else. But yeah, so, I look at the stuff that's going on. By the way, it's this cloud, as if we didn't have enough that went on over the weekend with, somebody taking a pot shot at Trump and Cheeto coming up with the most ridiculous excuses in the world. By the way, there's now a whistleblower out.
You're talking about the lady who's ahead of the
Head of the Secret Service. Right. Okay. When that thing first happened, I said, this is what DIE, which is what I've taken to rebranding DEI, and I'm always going to call it that from now on. So, like it or not, that's the moniker. I've just moved the order around. This is what DIE gets you when the rot gets all the way up to the best police force in the world, and I don't have to look at I don't have to cast aspersions at somebody's competence or whatever. All I have to look at is the fact that they detail 2 5-foot-4 women to cover a 6-foot-2 man, and therefore, and by the way, if you're a Secret Service agent and you're on a protective detail, in the last resort, your job is to get between between whoever's shooting and the protectee, all right, and take the round for them. And the premise behind this is that you have two layers of bulletproof vest on. Bulletproof, the bullet-resistant vests, they're made out of Kevlar. They will not stop rifle rounds. So you're going to get shot, and you're probably going to die. However, the two layers of that on your front and your back and your flesh in the center will stop it, and therefore you will take the round, but the person who you are protecting will be protected. And that is the job. And the only reason anyone's willing to do it is because everybody else is supposed to be doing their job, and therefore the odds that you will have to actually do that is infinitesimally small. Okay. If you're a 5'4" person, you cannot cover a 6'2" person without leaving their head open, because physics is physics. The laws of gravity have not been repealed.
Kind of, you got, standing. You got 5'2" cops in the city here without a billy club, without anything, and you expect them to break up a fight of two guys that are 6'5". I mean, come on. I mean,
6'5", and they're going at it, right?
Yeah, you're not gonna
have it. But here's the bottom line, all right? This is not sexism. This is fact. You find me some 6'4" women, and we can talk about them being reasonable, okay?
Well, I mean, I think the issue I was having, by the way, I had it yesterday on the show. I'm kind of disappointed about that. The issue of Biden in the last 4 or 6 months, year, whatever, you know, somebody on the right's going to say he's been like that for 30 years. Well, you know, okay, fine.
No, that's not true.
Yeah. So the anybody who's pays attention and has a view, you know, I'll tell you what, I can see an awful lot of problems in this world, but in the middle, if I don't blame it on one side or the other, I can blame it on both. It seems relatively clear what the issues sort of are. And I have had a few aging people in my family, and most of them not bad. My stepfather was a little bit of a challenge. as a matter of fact, because it's a gradual degradation. I mean, sometimes it's not. Sometimes they're fine at Christmas, and by Easter, you know, they're drooling on themselves, basically. I mean, but one day, I mean, I could sense that his driving wasn't so hot, right? And he's wasn't president of the United States, but a man of success, a man of ego, a man of intelligence, of education. And it's pretty hard to drop that bomb on somebody. So my mother calls me one day and she goes, "You don't know it, but today's your lucky day." And I go, "Okay, Mom, I'll bite. Why?" She goes, "Because Walter just went to get his driver's license and he flunked. So you're not going to you're not going to have the job of taking the keys away from him."
Oh, all right. Yeah, he failed.
Yeah, that would have been my job, you know, as the oldest son. And guess what happens? The next day she calls up. "Yeah, well, forget that conversation. He went back today and passed."
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Chief, I've been there. I had two grandparents that both, you know, their minds went before their bodies did. And one was really awful because his body just wouldn't quit, my gramps. And I mean, it was, I was a teenager at the time. It was horrid. All right. I couldn't deal with it. But I know exactly what it looks like because I've seen it there. And I have a cousin in my family that's a nurse, and she's probably, you know, good God, she's probably seen, you know, 500 elderly patients, right, with, you know, with similar progressions. And I've seen enough of the stuff with this. And, you know, as I was pointing out, the real problem is that as it progresses, what ends up happening is that as your memory breaks down, you start hallucinating, but it's not a pure hallucination like somebody taking mushrooms. It's components of your memory, but they're untethered from reality because the connections are broken.
But as you go down this road, again, everyone's different, but as you go down this road, I mean, not the people on the show, but all the people I've talked to all weekend, the vitriol that somebody should have known him once, the fact is, when somebody is in a position of power, is in a position of responsibility, and is an intelligent person to start with, which I think most people that are presidents, at least, God, I hope so, we only had like 50 of them, it is difficult. So what you do around them is you only bring them the decisions closer to yes or no. You try and take care of stuff, it's the small stuff, away from them. This is what people do. It's not your job. And what if somebody worked for Warren Buffett today and had a meeting with him and ran out and ran right for the press microphones and said, you know, I think Warren's losing it, blah, blah, blah. It's not up to you, your opinion. I mean, everybody now has an opinion on old age. I saw the guy. I listened to a guy last night. I saw the guy in the debate. He should have resigned that night. But wait a minute. You don't know what he... Did he look good at the debate? No, but... These opinions are, what's her name say? Opinions are like, you know, bottoms. Everybody's got one. They all think. Yeah. I mean, come on. Everybody now is an expert and agent. I brought up the question yesterday to a couple people. I said, we're talking about people of enormous egos. Now, right now, if you're on the right, your boy is older than this guy was when he went into office.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he gets in. I hope everything's fine for at least 4 years. Whether it's fine now or not, I don't know. I'm not close to the man. Is he showing some signs? To me, he looks like maybe he isn't quite the same guy as he was 4 years ago, but then again, neither are we, Carl. So, I mean, at what point, we're not close enough to know whether it's becoming a danger sign. But I can't imagine somebody walking into the ego this guy has 2 years from now and say you're losing it, you better drop the torch and give it to whoever, the guy from Ohio.
Oh, yeah. Forget about it. Yeah. But the thing is that you got to be an egomaniac to a significant degree to want that job in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, let's be realistic here. All right. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, make sure you got a Kevlar vest on because everybody's, you know, shooting the slings and arrows at you. You know, at least rhetorically, if not for real, there it is. And on the one hand, there's, you know, every now and then, I mean, if you just, okay, look, we've had, you know, in the next few, we'll have had 50 presidents, right?
Yeah.
We're not quite there yet, but there's only been one in the history of the office, only one, and it was the first one who voluntarily walked away.
Yeah.
Only one. Everybody else either ran out or got beat.
Well, you okay. Wonder, but here's, I just, everybody thinks now, maybe this is because of the media, because of cell phones, whatever it is, everybody thinks that they are the town crier. And they obviously have not been around anybody who either might be somewhat injured. I used the Lou Gehrig story yesterday. He finally had to quit himself. The manager wouldn't sit him down.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, if anybody has a modicum of history, well, if you, Franklin Roosevelt died in his fourth term, fairly early in his fourth term, correct?
Yeah.
And, when Harry Truman was interviewed to be the vice president, he looked at Roosevelt and he said, I'm not being interviewed to be president or vice president, being interviewed to be president. This guy's not going to last 4 years. Harry Truman's a pretty smart man. I got to believe the people around him and Roosevelt himself knew that. That's why they dumped Wendell Willkie. Now, did Harry Truman have the responsibility of running out there, picking up his friggin' cell phone, and telling everybody in the world that the president's a vegetable, which he wasn't really, but the president's very ill, and by the way, he's not going to make it 4 years. That's not his job, I don't think.
Right, right.
I mean, the question is, whose is it? I mean, I heard somebody last night tweeted me something to the effect that every single person in the White House, including Kamala Harris, was a liar by not saying this guy was going downhill as fast as he was, and they all should resign. And I mean, come on, should I have taken the keys away from my stepfather a week before I did? Yeah, is it a jailable offense, or is it you string me up in the high? Is there, everything you do in life should have been done a day before, right? I mean, duh.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I look at the, you know, the bad decisions I've made. Well, you know, if I hadn't done that, this wouldn't have happened, right?
Yeah.
But we're also a product of all the decisions that we've made, and then you look at those and you say, well, okay, that was terrible. However, look at this good thing that came about as a result of having to go through the bad, and if I hadn't done that thing, then the good thing wouldn't happen either, okay? Nothing's ever quite that clean, Chief, and that's, you know, that's one of the challenges I think that we all have. I mean, the other big story though, and the one that I think ought to get a whole lot more attention than it has, and how it came about. And everybody wants to play it off as a one-off and a singular, you know, singular screw-up. Is this CrowdStrike thing?
Yeah. Hey, can you? I'm not so sure if Kenny's back this week or not. Can you hang around in case he isn't?
Yeah, I sure can.
All right, because I know he's having some treatments, and I think he's doing okay. But I don't want to pressure him. So.
Yeah. No, but the CrowdStrike thing. There's the original speculation was that so. You've got drivers in an operating system, so
right, this is a longer discussion. Well, hang on to it for when you come back, I have by the way, I have huge questions about this thing. Because I mean,
I have some answers, and
the idea is that the Australian airliners go down the same time as Audrey's bank. I got an issue with, to be honest.
Well, not only that, but you got Delta that's still screwed.
Yeah, maybe you can tell why some are and some aren't. And why one of her bank branches of the same bank was open and three weren't? How the hell does that happen? Well, anyway, S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 7. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hopefully with Mr. Joel Ancona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 575. NASDAQ futures up 650. And you can't even talk your own name, Ricardo. You're in bad shape, I got to say. Dow futures up 32. Remember, yesterday we had, since I'm talking about it, yesterday, Dow was up 127. S&P up 59. NASDAQ up 280. So bounced back at least as much as we were down on Friday. So I guess that's a good thing for sure. Europe, DAX up 229, 1.2%. FTSE up 28.3%. Back around up 37.5%. I'm not so sure where all this bullish activity is coming from, but it's coming, at least in the last couple days. Nikkei down 4, I guess we'll call that one flat. Hang Seng down 166, another 1%, 17,469 as they tried to go up yesterday. Shanghai down 48, that's almost 2%. That's the first time they've had a big move in a while. They're 29.15, danger going under 2,900. We'll talk about that with Russell tomorrow. I know he's somewhat bearish on that area. There's nothing we can do about it. I don't think we can. They do have some Chinese ETFs, but I've never really wanted to trade one where the main markets are closed while you're trading it. It's kind of tough. It's not impossible, but it's kind of tough. 10-year down 3 basis points to 4.23. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.45. Japan up 1.06. Oil down again today, down 26 cents. I mean, it's under 80 pretty good here, 78.14. It was 82 last week, so that's a pretty good move. Brent down 24 cents, 82.16. Natural gas down a penny, 2.23. RBOB unchanged at 2.47. We've got gold, 24.11, up 16 bucks, so back up over 2,400. It was all the way in the high 2,400s, and whack, 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 down. Silver down 2 cents, 29 can't seem to stay over 30. Copper up, down 2 cents, 4.17. We've got the dollar, which has been playing with all this stuff. Euro's back to 108.6, so it's kind of in the middle of this range. And the British pound, 129. So they're a little higher than they were a few weeks ago, but not as high as they were the other day. And we've got Bitcoin down 1,300, 66,683. It's been kind of the biggest winner in the last few weeks. There you go, Ricardo. What do you got for Travis Weather Sports? Cubs win.
Cubs won. Yeah, you're absolutely right, actually. Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 67 degrees right now with a high of 83. Clouds and sunshine with a stray thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy and humid with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm, mainly early. Storms can bring flooding, downpours, and localized damaging wind gusts. Tonight's going to be a low of 68 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 94 degrees right now with a high of 112. Mostly sunny and hot. A thunderstorm late this afternoon, and as well, storms can bring flooding, downpours, and localized wind gusts. Tonight is going to be very warm with increasing clouds with low of 92 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, you're looking at 17 minutes. 38 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 28 minutes. 18 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 30 minutes. Lastly, sports, the MLB yesterday. White Sox lose to the Rangers 4-3. The Cubs beat the Brewers 3-1. And Diamondbacks lose to the Royals 10-4. Today we got back-to-back matches. Cubs versus Brewers in Chicago at 7:05 p.m. White Sox and Rangers in Arlington, Texas at 7:05 p.m. as well. And the Diamondbacks and Royals in Kansas City at 7:10 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
We have Mr. Joel.
Good morning,
how are you,
Chief.
Buddy?
How are you doing? 2 weeks away from me. Did you miss me?
I do. I always miss you. You always bring a interesting and lighthearted and knowledgeable view.
Okay, what do you want? You want to talk sports then?
Well, God, crazy stuff in the sports. You know, one of these days we're trying to get Kevin tomorrow to talk about, it's always kind of fascinating to me when I see new economic stuff happening. I always wish that, you know, I was like 10 different people when I was in grad school writing up these 10 different PhDs. But the Cubs drafted in the baseball 17 people, I think, from college and only three now from high school. And I wonder if that dynamic, if some teams are finding it better to go one way and some the other, and how, you know, your minor league system and how that plays out. It's sort of an interesting deal where the colleges are becoming the minor leagues. And if they start paying all these kids in colleges, I wonder someday if they're going to want to get paid by the major leagues for the contract or something.
Well, you know, it kind of seems to make sense, right? I mean, if you look at, you know, some of the other major sports, I mean, you know, basketball, you have them, you know, going from high school, not as much as you did. Football, you know, not allowed coming up through, you know, school and stuff. And, you know, I guess when it comes down to the economics, yeah, let the colleges play them. Let them develop a bit. The other thing, too, that I, you know, just so notorious in baseball, especially with these pitchers, is the injuries, you know? I mean, yeah, you get some young guy, you bring him in, you put him in the minors. You know, a lot of times they go bad in the minors. If, you know, let them prove their arm in colleges. Let them, you know, see if their durability. So it's all about economics, Chief. You know, baseball's for old people like us, right? Not a young fan base. They're trying to shake things up. But my Motor City Kitties are, man, they're really teasing the fans in the front office here going into the All-Star break. I mean, yeah, they're 5-6 games out of the wild card. They got some really good trade pieces, but I don't know if I mean, 6 games out of the wild card is a lot, but I don't know.
You got to go over so many teams to get there, it seems.
Yeah, you got to go over so many teams, and then if you get it, you know, if you get rid of some of these arms, they got two really good arms, and then, you know, you get rid of those. It's just tough. I'd love to see them, you know, kind of stand pat here and make a little bit of a run, but I would think they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline.
Well, this whole thing of sellers versus other stuff, I mean, it was Cleveland. It wasn't you guys that, you know, buried the franchise for 10 years when they traded Rocky Colavito. I mean, he was a fan favorite, and they're like, "What are you doing?" I mean, it seems like if you dig into some sports stories, especially, God, if you just open your phone up, every swinging idiot in the world is a deal maker. Everybody's a general manager. Does anybody ever like just watch the game and hope they win and enjoy yourself?
What about when the Tigers cleaned house and they traded Verlander?
Yeah,
you know,
same thing.
They had all those runs. I mean, you know, prospects are prospects, right? And, you know, one, like, the main prospect that they got for him was a pitcher named Franklin Perez, and, like, I don't even think he ever pitched a game in the majors. And we all know what Verlander did. And that, you know, did you know this? And I don't know if your listening audience knows this. but I cannot watch a Tiger game on my Comcast. Now, I don't have DirecTV. I don't have these other things. But because of a dispute between Bally Sports, I cannot watch the Tigers. Unbelievable. I mean, what else is there to do on a Sunday afternoon? Yeah.
I think a lot of L.A. still doesn't have. Up until a couple of years ago, I don't think they cut a deal with. Now, the dispute usually, what I know about it is, like say the Marquee here is in Chicago. Okay, they're the Cubs station. They want, let's say Comcast, or I just moved from Comcast. He's like RCN. But they want RCN to pay them, but they don't want RCN to turn around and make it an option for you. They want to include it in the basic. Otherwise, you're not, because you may say no. I mean, you know, this is not a sexist show, I hope. But how many women want to pay extra for the Cubs? Nobody. Might be a few. But really, I'm not so sure I would pay extra for them, to be honest with you. But I mean, but now all of a sudden the cable bill goes up $3, and part of that is the $1.50 that they're now paying every month to Marquee. That's what they want. When I say the team wants. They want the bill to go up, but not to be blamed on them. You know what I'm saying? And the last thing they want is to say, Mr. Joel, you can have the Tigers, but it's $5 more a month. And you go, does that include the winner? And they go, yeah. And you go, wait a minute, they're not out. You know, it's all how you get involved. It's just like, why do you think? Wait, you got me way off topic here, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Why do people watch CNBC more than Fox or more than Bloomberg? Because if you get the absolute slight over basic packet, I mean, once you get more than local, every cable company includes CNBC. So if you never watch it, unbeknownst to you on your cable bill, CNBC is going to get a quarter, 50 cents a month from you. Now, Fox is like the next level. Fox Business, not Fox Fox. Fox Business is the next level. So if you jump to the, if you go from the basic package to the basic plus, you're probably going to get Fox Business. That's why Fox Business has no chance of being CNBC in terms of total listenership. Now, Bloomberg is the next one down the line even more. It might be some special finance package that you have to buy or something. So Bloomberg is like the third stage. So when CNBC comes on the air, the commercials, you know, sometimes you look at the commercials, they have trouble getting commercials, but it's all because of this cable fee. So it's whether you're in the cable or whether you're not, right? So now in Chicago, the sports channel, which became NBC Sports, which has the Bulls, it used to have everybody, but now it's got the Bulls, the Hawks, and the Sox. Now somebody's decided to make a whole new station and drag those teams from the original, the NBC Sports. Now, I don't know, do they have a backup there? So if two of them are playing at the same time, there's another station? Because sometimes the Hawks and Bulls are on at the same time, and everybody wants to watch both of them because you're paying for both of them. Now, these are huge questions, Joel. I mean, you're just caught in one of them, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the amount of TV that I watch, I mean, you know, can't even name a handful of shows. I mean, I just want, you know, my Tigers, I mean, the Pistons have been absolutely unwatchable. You know, the Wolverines, you know, I got my, I'm usually there if they're home for football and basketball, sticking with those. And, you know, the Wings, I mean, basically a sports guy. I mean, the TV shows that, you know, my girls talk about, people talk about, I like have absolutely no idea. But, you know, I'm too lazy to cut the cable. And I'll tell you one thing, you go somewhere, you go to these hotels, and they have that DirecTV. Yeah. I mean, come on. There's 548 stations on there. Like, give me a break. I mean, I can't, you know, I just must be an old dummy or something, not be able to find stuff. But I've been on it. I have been unable to cut the cord. So, and now without the Tigers, it makes it.
Well, I'm real tempted, even though, you know, I procrastinate as well as anybody. I would like to get back and get the dish, because I'm tired of paying the city the taxes. You don't pay the taxes on the dish.
Yeah. All right, Chief, it looks like we're going to get through this segment without talking about the market.
Well, what do you think here? we had a huge down week, pretty huge, and then all of a sudden we had a big up day yesterday. All this politics, is this positive or is it neutral or what are we doing here?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you had, I haven't talked to you in a while, so we got a lot to catch up on. Just trying to read the market, you know, what's a Trump stock? What's a Biden-Harris stock? You know, what are interest rates right now? You know, you get the interest rate focus out of the way for, I guess we're cutting September, Chief, whether we need it or not. I mean, I guess that's a foregone conclusion. I just say it's history. So when it comes to history that I haven't experienced or lived in my life, I guess I just got to take a pass, take notes, and see what happens. Because whatever election cycle, your theories, all these things are now very, very muddled. And what I'll try and do is I'll just try and, look at the technicals. You know, at least the technicals could tell me where something's been in the past. And then you got earnings season, right? You got Google after the close. You got Tesla after the close. We'll see if this AI craze is actually, you know, flowing down to the bottom line. So I think, just like a horse that takes his eyes off the race, you got to put the blinkers on and just, you know, stay to what got you here, you know, whatever fundamentals there are, whatever technicals you like to follow. Or if you're just scared like the Dickens, what's going to happen in November, then you just get the hell out of the market and you lock up 5%, 6%, 7%.
So. Yeah, at least you can do that now. A few years ago, you couldn't do that. Well, Joel, thank you. Talk to you next week, buddy.
We'll talk to you next week, Chief.
Ricardo, do we have Kenny? If not, are we going back to Carl?
Yes, we do.
We have Kenny?
No.
Oh, we.
I'm here.
You are? Hey, buddy. You sound good. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Okay. I guess we're all just okay.
I'm good. I'm back in the Cape. I'm back in Cape Cod. I had been in Florida last week for a couple of things, but now I'm back at the Cape.
Good for you. Good for you. How's the weather up there?
The weather has been beautiful. Today it's kind of overcast. It rained all night. It looks like it's going to be kind of cloudy and overcast all day, but that's all right. I got stuff to do.
It's hard for me to even encapsulate all the stuff that's going on for 3 weeks, but for God's sake, I think
it's very interesting. I don't think, everyone goes, oh, the market was so surprised. I don't think the market was surprised at all. I think the last couple of weeks when the market was selling off, it was the uncertainty over, is he going to do it? When's he going to do it? Is he in? Is he out? Like all the questions around it, right? When he ultimately pulled out on Sunday, then there was clarity, right? Now we know he's out. So we're moving on to what we think the next deal is. It certainly appears like Kamala is the deal because she received enough delegates to make her the nominee. They raised over $200 million in a 24-hour period after he pulled out. So I'm curious, what does that say then about Joe Biden if they raised $200 million in 24 hours after he pulled out, to fund the Democrats? So I think it's kind of interesting to see where this goes. It's going to be next up is who's she going to pick? And how's that going to affect investors? Meaning, what are they going to think about it? Is it good? Is it bad? What's it mean for policy? What's it mean for the Democrats? What's it mean for the Republicans? So now there's just this kind of uncertainty around policy. But I think the candidates are now out there, right? We know who they're going to be, other than the vice president still. But we basically know who the two presidential candidates are, and then the market will function from there. But I'm not surprised. We say this all the time. Investors shouldn't make decisions based on political events for the long term. They create short-term chaos, but they certainly don't price stocks in the long term. It's still about earnings and economic cycles and economic data that power stocks.
Well, my issue with the whole mess, and it's one of my big issues always has been about Trump, and I include the Democrat side in this. We have probably two or three dramatically huge issues in front of the American public, and I'm convinced that we're going to go all the way to November and not talk about any of them. All you're going to have is Trump accusing the other side of causing the inflation when he's the one who did it, and that's the Republican talking point right now. It's number one, and we're going to talk about the people on the border, and we're going to totally miss the inflation. Did you hear my new word, shockflation? I'm actually
shocked. No.
Shock, it's a It's the idea that that inflation, people on day-to-day activities, as much as they don't like it, they might have cut back to, you know, the bar two nights a week to one, or they've shuffled their budget around to the point where they are buying something a little different, or they're not going doing this, or not doing that, or not doing a vacation. But they still are totally unprepared for an expense that they didn't plan on and how high that expense is. When I talked to some people last week, and a guy just had his air conditioner go out, his central air. He goes, my buddy wants $3,500 and the big place wants $7,000. I'm going out tomorrow and buying a window unit. He goes, I can't afford that.
Right.
You know, it's the stuff you didn't, it's everybody went and got the dogs during COVID. All of a sudden, the vet bill for the dog is $5,000 or something. And you go, say what?
Right.
You know, what would, our buddy, Dan Janitas, was his transmission on his Mercedes 25? I mean, he's like, what the bleep? I mean, it's the roof. It's a stump. You never even, wait a minute, last time I got my house painted, it was $2,000. Now you want $5,000? It's the stuff you never even, so it's out of the normal sort of thing. You know, if you had a tree problem last week in the big storms here, you want $3,000 to take the tree down? I mean, say what? I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I think people are just, they don't even have a clue, because I know I don't, because I'm doing some construction stuff in a place, and I'm stunned at the price of stuff. It's really hard to anticipate what you might have to spend stuff on if something bad happens. Not to, even talking about a hotel room, I mean, a hospital room, for God's sake.
Right. You're going to be caught, you know, off guard, for sure. Look, I told that story. I don't know if I told you. You know, 6 months ago, my wife was rear-ended on 95, right? And what looked like not a ton of damage, you know, she had to have a new trunk hood and all that shit, and the bump was pushed in. But I thought, okay, it's not a ton of damage. It was $25,000 worth of damage. I go, $25,000.
What kind of car? What, I mean, is this a, what is this thing? A Rolls or a Duesenberg?
No. It's a 2019 BMW, right? But it's all about the electronics that are in the car. The camera, back, the electronics. Suddenly, the price was 25. I said, why don't you just total the car? Oh no, we won't do that. So they spent The insurance company spent $25,000 repairing the car. And so then you want to know why A, insurance rates are through the roof, and B, it's all a direct result of these crazy higher costs that people don't recognize, right? I never expected it to be that much when I looked at it.
Well, Carl has said a couple times, he's gone through the whole routine about how many sensors, alignment sensors, brake sensors, that, and all of a sudden the auto part, it's not just putting the bumper and the trunk lid back on at all. I mean, it's crazy.
Right, and that's exactly what it was, right? When they explained it to me, you know, you had to look at all the, to your point, the sensors, the cameras, all that stuff that now is in the cars, right? That had to be...
Well, plus you can't just, again, according to Carl knows this stuff, and not that you don't, you can't go without it. You can't just say, I'm not putting the camera back in, screw it, because it's now the whole thing won't run.
Right, that's right. You can't do that. You're absolutely right.
Grudgingly, I'm up into the early 2000s on my trucks, grudgingly, because I don't want any of that stuff. I just don't want it, Kenny. I mean, tell you about the guy with the new Toyota. They aligned his truck, and the machine they bought, this is at the Firestone place, $500,000 they paid for the thing. Not to do the alignment, but to reset all the sensors.
Right.
And it's all of a sudden the machine's down. All of a sudden I see my truck up on the alignment. He goes, you just told me the machine's busted. He goes, not for your truck. It's not busted. We just do the alignment. Okay, then.
Right.
So I sense this inflation. I don't see either side really understanding it or talking. I don't think either side knows what they did, which is scary to me. They have no concept of where this healthcare cost is going. Nobody seems to be able to deal with what's this... Fatso drug that's cost $5 and it costs $1,000. Nobody seems to have a clue to how to deal with that. So all the stuff that are affecting people, I don't see either side are even talking about. Do you?
No, not at all. No, not at all. And I think that's going to be that's going to come back to haunt them all, because while, you know, they say it's going down, inflation's getting better, all that stuff, you and I both know the stuff that we need every day is not going down. Absolutely not going down.
I think it's probably still going up.
My guess is it probably is still going up. But, you know, they're going to try to convince you, because if they say it is, then it is. I guess that's what we're just supposed to believe, right? No matter what our eyes and ears tell us. But one way or the other, I think that's going to come back and bite them all, because I think if they prematurely cut rates, which I think they're going to do in September, I think it's a mistake, but I think then they're going to reignite the inflation monster. And they're already saying, you know, that, you know, Biden's got it under control. It's going to be Trump that causes inflation to rear its ugly head again. And I don't think that's true at all. It's going to be the Fed cutting rates. They're going to stimulate the economy. But, you know, even if Trump wins, he's not taking over until January. And by then, I think the inflation will have already started to rear its ugly head again.
Well, they're not. The money supply is going up again.
Yeah.
I mean, not by a lot, but by some. What the... Yeah. The I don't see anybody making any move to do anything with these drug companies and hospitals. I mean, that's just relentless. I mean, I don't know how you sort of deal with these on a personal level, Kenny. I mean, the people I hang around with, I'm looking around and I go, we're never gonna these not a person here is ever gonna buy a new car again.
No, well, I hear you. Have you even gone to look at the price of a new car today? It's crazy.
I put a basic pick me up in there. You know, they're not as basic as they were. I think it was 50 for if you could find one.
Yeah,
we're talking about, you know, they actually have a 4-cylinder engine now in a full size Chevy.
No, it's probably, really?
Yeah, it's probably like a five. I think the only engine choices are the 4-cylinder and the 5.3. There's no 6 and there's no small 8.
Really?
Yeah. And it was, so, I mean, I think the thing was 52 or something, and you know, I priced it on Kelly or whatever. And any kind of a... Audrey went and... there's a place right by her, a place. There was a big... I guess it was a small farm field, and the guy sold it, and they're putting all these houses and townhomes in. So she goes and... of course, I didn't want to go in with her. And but she went, but it's her job. You know, so she loves looking at houses. So in she goes. She comes out... Kenny, the base price, $699, right? Yeah. As shown, $850. I'm looking at the list of crap. It's backsplash, $2,000.
Yeah.
You know, toilet. And I'm kidding about this. Toilet, $1,000. Toilet that flushes, $2,000. You know, a dry bar, $9,000. What do you mean a dry bar? There's no plumbing there. There was an 10 by 12 deck hanging off the back of the kitchen. $10,000.
Yeah,
it is incredible, the cost on this stuff. And I had a client I talked to yesterday, and he's in one of the construction businesses downtown. It's fairly, some kind of plumbing, or it's water sprinklers or something. I think the contract they just signed is $1,200 a day, all in for a worker.
Yeah, it's nuts, right?
I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, granted, you know, guys don't work every day, but how do you even get on this road. I mean, I don't see people's salaries going up like that at all. Do you? Now, what if the wealth bubble ever breaks, Kenny? What if the wealth bubble ever breaks?
I honestly think, to your point, salaries are not going up that much, and the cost to do anything is just crazy. Is that I think we're at that break. I think we're going to get to that breaking point sooner rather than later. I really do.
But enough people have the homes that have gone from 250 to 5, and enough people are in the stock market, which every week except for last week creates money like there's no tomorrow. What if, you know, God, I hope not, if clients and myself and you and other people I care about, what if we get the 40% drop and we go back to where we were before COVID, or 50%? It's not all that impossible. You know what?
No.
What if that happens, and all of a sudden these houses go from 410 down to 310? Would you still hire than they were 3 years ago? I mean, what does that do to the quote wealth bubble? It seems to be percolating everything. I mean, Audrey for 3 weeks has been very articulate, telling people how. I mean, and she's been pretty busy. Virtually every person that she's selling houses from is trading dollars. Either it's somebody who has a place that went up to $1 million and they're selling that and buying one for $7 million because they're downsizing. Or to somebody who has the one that's up to $7 million, got an inheritance from their dad, and they're paying $1 million. These are all cash transactions. There's no mortgage or anything of any kind.
Right, but if they're cash transactions, that's the point, right? They're not. So the mortgage interest rates don't really make a difference to them, because they're not financing.
Right.
They're just paying cash for it, and that's it. It's right? Like, they got to live somewhere. So if they're in it, they're in it. And if the price of the house goes down, okay, so then they still got to live somewhere. They pay cash for it, so they're not paying a mortgage on it. So they're just going to live there and ride the cycle. It's going to be tough. I mean, it'll be ugly, but that's what's going to have to happen, right?
Well, and the who's the lady, the daughter of Las Vegas Sands guy? He croaked, right?
Yeah.
Well, now she's got all this stack that, of course, not getting into policy here, she has to pay no tax on, right? Because she gets the new basis, which is insane. In my even though I have a lot of clients, I want to see that happen, that they get the stock without having to pay taxes. Why nobody ever pays taxes on it, I have no idea. Anyway, so now she doesn't have to pay taxes, and she trades that bubble of cash for a bubble of cash in Mark Cuban's team. It's not like the lady went out and earned, $500 million. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, that's a lot of hours at the welding stand. Is $500 million? I mean, it's this to think that the Fed is not amazingly more concerned about preserving this wealth bubble than they are, you and I getting a raise. I mean, that's where the power is in this country, despite which side of the aisle I think you're on. I think you're right.
I think it's going to be very difficult, though, as we go through this. The Fed's going to be, I hate to say it, it's going to be just, my fear is that it's going to be very much a replay of what happened in the early 80s, when the Fed's going to be forced to raise rates, the company's going into a deep, dark recession like we did for 2 years.
Yep.
Right? Everything collapsed, the price of houses collapsed, all that stuff, and in order for it to readjust. And my sense is, we're going to have history repeats itself, and I hate to say it, but I think people need to prepare for that.
Well, do you think? I think on a personality level, I don't think Powell wants Trump back in because he can't stand the guy. But that doesn't mean that he's going to force policy that way. I think they're just not going to. I'm surprised if they do anything between now and the election, just for that reason, to be honest with you.
Well, listen, the market is prepared for a rate cut. Really, the Fed funds futures are pricing in 100% in September, something like 62% in November, and 87% in December. In my mind, they're looking for three rate cuts before the end of the year, which I think is completely ridiculous.
Well, so if they drop from 5.5 to 5, why is Home Depot up like 15% in the last 3 weeks? Does that mean my credit card rate's going to go from 24 to 12? I think not.
No, it's not. No, it's absolutely not. Right.
Which makes you wonder who they're talking about here.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know who they're talking about, but,
We had rates at zero for a while, and how many people were still paying 15 or 18 or 20?
That's right, on the revolving credit cards. They never came down. They never went to sub-double digits.
I actually did a minor league survey, as best you can, Kenny. I think between 2010 and 2020, as the rates went down to zero, I think my half-ass analysis was that credit card rates actually went up.
Yeah.
So they really didn't worry about forcing it down to every man, did they?
No, they did not worry about forcing it down to every man.
Well, hey, I love hearing you, buddy. Now, please do not go out there and get eaten by a shark.
No sharks where I am.
You sure?
There's no sharks here.
That you know of.
I've been coming here for 60 years since I was a baby. There's no shocks.
Okay, well, maybe one. You know what they say? Kenny was talking about, or Carl was talking about, some people believe that there's like a homing thing on a bullet. Maybe like there's a name, somebody's name in every shark's mouth. You never know about that. Anyway, right. You take care of yourself. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Be right back, Professor Helsner.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JAX. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down up 350. NASDAQ Futures going the other way here, down 10, but I must say we're pretty flat here after yesterday's big rally. Do we have the professor? Do we have Carl as well?
We have both, yeah.
Hey, Al.
Sorry, give me 1 second. Give me one second here.
Al, do you mind if we Carl on for a bit? Because this outage, the first thing I wanted to ask you is how much did it affect people in academia? And Carl was going to talk about it. I'm mystified because Australian Airlines were down. Our contributor and my significant other Audrey, went to three bank branches. Two were down and one was up. So I thought maybe for 10 minutes if we let Carl try and explain this. Carl, how the hell does this work or not work? The interconnectivity not only seems pretty bizarre, but also seems kind of sporadic.
Well, it's not interconnectivity. It's stupidity. And let me just give it like the 30-second overview of what happened. So there's anything that's part of the operating system, and you have things that are in there that have to be there because you have a different sort of disk, for example, than somebody else perhaps. Okay, so the newer PCs that go on desks usually have what's called an NVMe disk, which is a little stick, looks kind of like a elongated credit card, right? And it's all solid state, doesn't have any moving parts. But the older ones, of course, are, you know, they've got spinning platters in them, right? And there's other things that are in your computer. So, you know, you have a sound card, but the manufacturer is different from yours to the other guys. The graphics card that does your display, you know, they're made by different companies, the different series. They all have to have drivers that are part of the operating system. Those drivers on modern operating systems have to be signed in some way with a digital signature. And the reason is that they, by definition, have to have access to everything that the computer does in order to do their job. If there is a flaw in one of those, the program that gets terminated is the operating system. Okay, so you get on Windows, you get a blue screen. On a Mac, you get a pink screen. On a Unix box, we call it a panic. It's usually black with a bunch of text on it.
Oh, God.
You know, well, but I mean...
It's the screen of death, wherever it is.
It's the screen of death, and the reason, normally, with a regular application program, if there's a flaw in it, the program gets terminated. Now, in the old days, there was no separation that was enforced by the actual processor, by the hardware. So this is one of the things, you know, if there'd been an error like this in the code that was in the Apollo capsules, everybody on board would have been dead because the machine would have crashed. And without that, you couldn't have flown the mission and everybody would have died. When I started doing this kind of thing, there was no protection against this sort of event either. And some of the equipment that I was writing code to control was either very expensive or very dangerous or both. And if something went wrong with it, yeah, people could have gotten injured or killed. Today, we have this separation. So your application program blows up, and it prints an error message and disappears off your screen. But if it happens in the operating system, you get the blue screen of death. Okay, you get die. And these vendors have what goes into the operating system as a driver. what's sold as threat mitigation software. So, you know, people try to hack into computers all the time, right? And this is software that goes in there.
What did Kevin say, that he had 8,000 hacks a day or something? Was going to the Betterword books or some huge number?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I've people try to break into my systems that, you know, where my blog's published constantly. I've people trying to break into my systems at the house. It's a constant drumbeat of people.
Hal, is this a constant talked about subject at the universities, the systems and stuff?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of security issues on university campuses. A lot of professors aren't very... I don't think they really understand. I mean, maybe they do now, but every week it seems like we get emails from IT warning about this and that. And they also took away our administrative privileges. When I was teaching IT, business IT at Westminster, it made it really difficult because I couldn't install, you know, software that I wanted to install on the lab computers. So. I experimented with, you know, different levels of, you know, different kinds of ways to run Python code, and I finally, you know, settled on CoLab. But it's a problem on campuses. I haven't noticed anything right now. Nothing's been. I haven't been affected by it personally. I mean, we're all off this summer, right? So I haven't been on a campus.
Yeah.
Since spring. So.
Yeah. So here's basically what happened here is that this company has a piece of software that is a kernel driver. It goes into the operating system, becomes part of the operating system, and then it reads a bunch of parameter files in order to control what it does. It's kind of like how Microsoft's built-in antivirus software works, but it's much more comprehensive than that. And at some point in the past, there was a flaw in this software that was distributed. Now, I don't know how long the flaw's actually been there, but what set it off was a bad parameter file that got an update file that caused it to attempt to reference an invalid location in memory. And when that happens, the machine panics because you get the blue screen of death. Because that is a driver and it's running with privileges. It's running in what's called ring zero, which is where the operating system is. And kaboom, you're dead. Now, the problem is that if you think about this, why is it that a check stand at Walmart or the pickup screen or the register at Home Depot, all of which, you know, people have pictures of them being blue screened, why is it that those computers would have any use for a piece of software like this? Why are they connected potentially to the outside internet where such a threat and such a risk is present at all? Okay, and the answer is, and it's the same thing all the way through, you know, all corporate America now. We got all these blue-haired kids that come in here. By God, they got to be able on Facebook while they're working. and you know what? And they demand to be able to do their, you know, be on Facebook or TikTok or read their email or, you know, their personal email, not their business email, their personal stuff. You know what? The answer to that is, you're stupid. No. Why does a restaurant have their in-house stuff that, you know, you got a computer. It takes your order book. It does your credit card processing, you know, whatever have you. The only place that computer should be able to connect to physically is, okay, you got a little box here that does the interface to your credit card processor. Right? And that's all it does. Right. Other than that, it never gets out of the building. Now, if you want to have a guest Wi-Fi so people can have Wi-Fi when they're eating or whatever, okay, fine. But that is a completely separate thing. There should have absolutely no connection between these, these components at all. There ought to be a physical.
Somehow you hit the nail on the head a little bit, because you remember Matty, our original producer. Matt was in the service industry for credit cards. I mean, for protection industry for credit cards. Somehow it's the hookup, Carl, because
it is, Chief, but you know what? It doesn't have to be done that way. And I've written this code before, and I've architected this stuff. It does not have to be put together in that kind of a fashion. You don't have to expose every machine within your enterprise in order to do something like take plastic.
I'm sure you're right, but he would say that when you used to go in the Tripoli tap, they'd walk over to this little thing essentially hooked into the copper phone line. and that's what they use for your credit card. He said the thing was totally idiot proof.
Well, but now it's over the internet.
Yeah, now it's over the internet. Once you decide
Here's the thing. I can take a $25 Raspberry Pi computer and build a gateway that the only thing that little box can do, it sits on your network in your bar, but the only thing it does is connect to the credit card processor and process your credit card transactions. That's all it does, okay? And it does nothing else. And now the rest of your you know, waitress, you know, they got their little handheld things or whatever in some places now. Okay, fine, whatever. That's not a problem. But all your other stuff inside your enterprise, the only thing it gets to is the things they have to. And it's a different, the two choices are deny everything and grant explicit permissions for those things that have to happen in order for your business to run. Okay, that's one model. And the other one is permit everything and lock down the things you think are dangerous. Well, guess what? The second one is stupid. All right. Now, you know, for you and your house, all right, you do what you want, because you know what? Some people want to sit there and, you know, look at Pornhub.
Yep.
But why should I be able to look at Pornhub while I'm at work? All right.
Well, that's the problem. Well, you know, our when we Stacks and Jacks, we have two lines. The one that, you know, we go out and we send the text messages and everything. That's a regular hookup, but the one that goes into our Anthem software, that's a dedicated line. It only goes in there.
Well, by God, it ought to be.
Yeah.
You know, but this is. But see, here's the thing. You want to know why? All right. So Delta right now is still trying to do dispatch basically on a whiteboard because their systems got blown up by this. All right. Who was the mental midget genius within their IT department that did this? Who within Home Depot was the mental midget genius that had this stuff on their check stand, so when you went and tried to check out, you couldn't because they were all blue screened? In order to fix this, you have to go to every one of those computers and remove the offending files.
Or you could go get the cash register, but then you don't have those anymore.
Well, the cash register is a computer that runs.
I know. Anyway. Right?
But the point is, it's the architecture that's the problem. And these companies that sell this stuff, you know, these guys, you know, CrowdStrike, they're getting chopped up a little bit now. But their model is, oh, everybody has to have this because, you know, we're going to come in here and we're going to give you the hard sell about how the bad hacker from Russia is going to steal all your stuff and, you know, blow your computer up if you don't do it. Okay, guess what, guys? If my infrastructure has no way to get outside of my enterprise, and it does the enterprise's work, because that's what I pay people to do, is come into work and do the enterprise's job and not sit there and chat on Facebook and go to whatever God knows what site and be able to load whatever on their computer, and I actually have a IT group within my organization, then I do not need the overhead or the risk of something like this on every computer in my building, nor do I need to pay you for it. And the big problem is that this was a mistake. But as I pointed out over the weekend, I posted about 20 lines of pseudocode, which is basically a description of an algorithm, but it's not the actual code to do it. That would be not a mistake, but malicious. About 20 lines, it would take a talented programmer such as myself about an hour to write the stuff for real, okay, not just describe it. And it would, after it got kicked off, activated by some external event, who knows what it would be, sits out there until that event happens. Somebody posts a tweet that says, boom, okay, comes from a specific account, and all of a sudden it starts. And all it does is once a second, it randomly scribbles on a file location on any attached storage resource that it can find. And that's all it does. And it would take hours, days, or weeks before people realized what had happened. And when it did, it would literally destroy our connected infrastructure all throughout the world and put us back electronically to the Stone Age.
Yeah. And Carol, how about we pick this up again on Friday? Because I think it's a longer... More.
Yeah, Chief, this is really bad stuff, okay? And that it got this far into this. And I mean, I should have caught this because, you know, how's CrowdStrike have a $400 stock price, okay? And they did before they got chopped up.
Yeah.
But the reality is that this stuff never should have been there. It's the business model and the infrastructure and the architecture that's broken.
Well, the
it's
PE's,
not that
the
these
PE's,
guys had a problem.
PE's 500 and something or whatever, so.
Well, this kind of stuff is it's insane, okay? It's insanity, and it's stupid, and we're going to pay for it.
Well, let's
it's
pick
just
it up.
A matter
let's,
of time.
Let's pick it up on Friday. I'm sure we'll have other stuff, and I'll get over to our professor before he falls asleep.
Hey, John. Hey, Carl.
Hal, what do you – this – these kind of embedded problems that might be around, sort of like embedded inflation. What do you make of this on the all the problems? There's always problems, right? How do you tell if a problem is a big problem or not? The I mentioned yesterday, and I forget the name of the book, was a Tom Clancy book where some nation wanted to start a war with, I think it was Japan. It was a long time ago, back when Japan was more of a threat than China. And how the first thing they did was jam up all the computer systems and screw up the stock exchange and drop the New York Stock Exchange, you know, price down 40% in one day or something. And I mean, they started the whole mess by doing something just like this. How do you even look at those kinds of risks and quantify them? They're there. I guess they're the black swan, but how do you even what do you even do about it?
Well, what I always think is when you don't really have data, you don't have any data to test hypothesis, I always ask the question, who benefits? And that brings up situations we don't really want to think about. And then I also think about unlikely events happen. Like, for example, you hit a half-court shot and then lightning hits the tree outside your house. And maybe you think you're lucky, and so you go to Vegas, and maybe you roll 3 8s in a row, right? And you think you're on a lucky streak, but you're not, because these probabilities, when you use the word and, this event, and this event, and this event, and this event happens, and those probabilities are really close to zero. When you multiply probabilities are really close to zero, the product of those gets even closer to zero, right? And that's why Metallica sings about your luck running out, right? Your luck runs out. An example in class I use, I have students stand up. If it's a big classroom, it's really cool. I have students stand up with a quarter in their hand and I have them flip a coin. And the ones that get ahead, they stand. The ones that get tails, sit. And if you have 500 students in there, well, you're going to observe a really unlikely event happening. There'll be a student standing after 9 or 8 rounds, and they'll have 8 heads in a row, right? So unlikely events do happen, right? Everybody else has sat, right? People win in the lottery. That's a very unlikely event that you're going to win the lottery, but a guy will win. Two guys will win. How many million people lost, right? So unlikely events happen. Unlikely events are the things that make the news. And the unlikely events that were going on this week, we had the Trump assassination. We had the Republican National Committee convention, which looks like the Republicans are united. And then at the same time, you have Joe Biden. Something happened to him. He's gone. And now we have Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee. And oh, by the way, we have this thing that happened on Friday, right? Now, is there something nefarious going on? I don't know. Can all these events, these crazy events, I mean, think about this last week or so.
Yeah, you become immune to it.
It's like overload, right? And then you go on Twitter and they're, you know, what I love about Twitter is people are having these conversations.
Everybody's an expert. Opinions. Hell, everybody's an expert on everything.
But hey, I tell you, I think they're doing a better job of investigating. You know, they get it wrong. They'll tweet some stuff that's wrong, but that gets corrected with new correct information. I think Twitter's doing a much better job than the Secret Service and FBI are doing. I mean, did you see that crap show that happened yesterday with the director of the Secret Service?
I've been hearing about it. I didn't.
It was horrible.
You know the weird part, though, Hal, is last Friday we had more time with Carl. We went through, actually we did the day after it happened. We're on that Monday, or Tuesday, 2 days after it happened. And actually it was Saturday, 3 days after it happened. The the amount of the protocol, everybody is an expert on what the Secret Service should have done, shouldn't done. And yet, I don't think anybody, me included, because that's what I was asking Carl, because he knows more about this stuff than I do. What is the protocol on all this stuff? I mean, and what is the Secret Service's mission? What is their power? Well, I'm saying simple stuff. You and I are running this event. The Trump people, I was going to say the Biden people, the Harris people, come to us and say, okay, we've got a thing going on in the Kane County Fairgrounds, and we're expecting 3,000 people. And by the way, most of them are donors, and we're going to give you all their names, and you get to vet all these people, and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, we get out there, and there's 15 different buildings that have a sight line into the place. We have 20 people, and now immediately we say, what the bleep, we really need 40 people. I'm not saying this happened. I'm saying, what are the protocols? Can the Secret Service tell the president or the presidential candidate, in this case Trump, I'm not saying they did or they didn't, can they say, hey, look, you said there was going to be 3,000 people, there's 4,500. You said that this was going to be this, and we are set up for, you know, 40 people on our end, and now it looks to me like if we were to do this right, we need 60. And oh, by the way, the local Leos, local law enforcement, if you're watching NCIS, the local Leos were supposed to give us 70, and by the way, there's a high school football game going on, so we only got 40, and we can't get anybody else. We think we should cancel the event. Not saying they did that, I'm sure they didn't. What does Trump's people say? Well, screw you, we're not. Now, where does this all shift to? I mean, what is the protocol? What if RFK says, okay, you just gave me Secret Service protection, I'm going to have a rally in downtown Chicago in the Daily Center Plaza tomorrow. Now, okay, when they said they're going to give him protection, they might mean two people or four people. Now he needs 40. Do they have the 40? Do they tell him, no, you can't have that? And he says, I'm doing it. You guys figure you cover me or don't. I have no idea how this even works. Yet everybody, maybe everybody else has gotten the blueprint. I don't, but everybody's an expert, and all I have is questions.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want some answers, I think you watched that Mark Wahlberg movie called The Shooter. My wife laughs about it because for about a year, if it was on TNT, I watched it. And I just found it fascinating because one reason why I found it fascinating is because I found myself being a lot like Mark Wahlberg's character in that movie. I was mathematically gifted. I didn't know I was. I mean, math was so easy for me when I was in high school that I didn't even think about pursuing it as a major.
You were like the Unabomber.
Yeah, so I really identified with the character. And, you know, when he was talking about, you know, wind trajectories and this and that, and then he's asked to, by the Secret Service, I believe, to scout out like three or four events that the fictional president was going to be on in the next couple weeks because they had this credible threat of, you know, an assassination. He gives them the report on Philadelphia, and he says the clock tower, you know, I think it's like 1,000 yards away from where the president's going to be talking. That's where you got to be. It's kind of like the high point, and it's got a straight-on view plus the flags. There was nobody in a water tower that was nearby. There was nobody on the roof, and we found out yesterday that the guy that was supposed to be on the roof, where that shooter ended up being, he didn't want to go on the roof. He or she didn't want to go on the roof because it's too hot, right? So I think this goes to a point that Carl was making, right? People have to be accommodated. And I think the problem, generally speaking, with the Secret Service is, you know, they're not being paid by Trump. They're not being paid by the Biden campaign. They're not being paid by RFK Jr.
Well, who pays all the overtime for like the local Leos? Is that the campaign?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe the Secret Service does. So all this is being subsidized. And it's the problem with higher education. You work at a public school, and they have a different calculus, right? They can make bad decisions, and their bad decisions are subsidized by the state to some extent. A small private liberal arts college, that's not Harvard, that's not Princeton, they can't be as reckless with decision-making. They can't. Because if they make a bad decision, that one decision can put them under, right? They're out of business altogether. So it goes back to this idea of subsidy. And I brought this up to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on Twitter. I don't think he responded to my tweet. But I said, are you really thinking that $0, hiring the Secret Service at $0, is better than spending the $1.4 million you're currently spending for a private security team? I think the $1.4 million is a better deal if you want to reduce the risk of being assassinated, because the Secret Service is not being paid by the campaign. They're being paid by the U.S. taxpayer. Well, actually by the Fed through inflation, right? So that's who's paying them, right? If the transactions between the campaign and the security detail, I guarantee you they want to continue working, right? They don't want to be fired. And from the trial, the what was going on yesterday with the congressional investigation of the Secret Service, it is obvious that everybody in the Secret Service knows they are not going to get fired for a person, for an attempt that should have resulted in the death of a former president. They're not getting fired. So they're not being held accountable by the market discipline, right? They're not going to be disciplined at all, from what I see, right? Nobody was disciplined for the debacle in Afghanistan. Nobody's going to be disciplined from this.
Well, nobody was disciplined for Iraq. There were no weapons of mass.
Exactly. Nobody was disciplined for that debacle that was Iraq, for the debacle that was Afghanistan. Before, 2021, the 10 years wars that we had in Afghanistan and Iran.
Well, yeah.
The people that were disciplined in Abu Ghraib were the jail keepers, the guards.
I read a couple of books on people that are going to, and the one that I always find is fascinating is The Day of the Jackal. Was that Frederick Forsyth, or was that, it might have been, Carl, would you mind looking?
Is that the book that the movie The Jackal is based off of,
in the book they never even said who the guy was. But he was a, because the guy that the British thought he wasn't the guy. The other guy came back to his apartment and said, what are you guys doing here? But he...
that was written in 1973, wow.
Yeah, well, it had to do with... probably have to finish this after break. But it had to do with when De Gaulle shut down the French Foreign Legion.
Mm.
A lot of people were pissed off because a lot of people were involved in that. They were making money in it. That was like the colony police for the French, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I one of these days I'll have to read a little bit about those guys. But they ended up... They monitored this group, this old Foreign Legion became kind of a terrorist group, and they knew they were after they made a bunch of attempts at De Gaulle, and one of them they shot out the back windows. That's why he would only drive in a Peugeot, because he survived an assassination attempt in a Peugeot.
Mm.
So he said, I'm never driving another car because these windows didn't shoot out or something. Anyway, so all of a sudden their chatter went down, and they knew they were up to something. So they kidnapped one of their guys and tortured the living bleep out of him. And the only thing they got out of him was the term a fair foreigner. So they knew they were in deep trouble because they had hired somebody, as a real assassin. And so they handed it to this is how police work. The French were smart enough to say, okay, wait a minute, who's your best guy? And they said, well, we've got all these guys that are this district commander, this district commander. No. Who's your best guy? Which isn't the same thing, right? It's this detective that kind of nobody likes, but he's like really good. So they get this dude, and he says, you got to give me complete control. I mean, I need two assistants. I need an apartment down here. But the thing he had going for him, and this is unbeknownst to this whole mess with the Secret Service and what the job really is and how tough it is, but the thing he had going for him is he figured if he was a professional assassin, the guy had to be able to get himself an escape route because he didn't want to die. And that guy is actually more easy to trace than somebody doesn't care if he dies. Then you got a real problem. Like this kid, he didn't care if he got shot, and he ended up getting shot. That is a much more dangerous person to try and figure out than somebody – who doesn't want to die? Because now all of a sudden, if you need an escape route out, that lowers your what you can do. You know, in other words, if you start shooting from a tower and there's no way off the tower, you're going down, right? So that person is much harder to find than if somebody says, well, I'm going to kill De Gaulle, but I also want to get my ass out of here. So there's a big distinction between someone who's willing to, an assassin suicide guy versus an assassin I need to get out of here guy.
Yeah, a professional hitman would have probably done it from the water tower and then had a zip line from the water tower to a car, right? A lot further away, easier escape. That roof was only 150 yards away.
Yeah, but it was also a death trap for
no
the kid.
Escape. Yeah,
but
no
it was
escape.
it was a death trap for the kid.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 71. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures down 71. We were up just like a couple of minutes ago, and now all of a sudden, then we were unchanged, and now we're down. So we're not down so far that we can't come back, but we're down a lot more than we were 10 minutes ago for some reason. Dow Futures down 13. Individual stocks, we got GM. They had good earnings. They were up over $2. Now they're up $1.59. Then we have UPS, which obviously they don't like those earnings. They're down almost 9%, for God's sake. They're down to $132, down $13. That's an ouchie. We've got Federal Express down with them in some sort of sympathy, down $4.93. So there you go. Over in Europe, though, these guys were up huge a minute ago. No, not as much. DAX still up 1% at 186. FTSE, though, is now down 8. It's 0.1%. CAC's up 4. They're all pretty bullish across the board, and they're coming back here, except for the DAX. Over in Asia, now they can't move. They're closed. Nikkei down 4. Call that flat. 39,594. Hang Seng down 166. 0.9%. Well under 18,000 at 17,469. And Shanghai had a big move to the downside here, down 48.7%, 29.15. That's a big move down for those guys. Nowhere near 3,000 there. Yesterday, Dow was up 127, S&P up 59, Nasdaq down 280. So we're not down anywhere near what we were up yesterday. So far, not so much. 10-year down 2 basis points, 4.24. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.45. Japan up 1.06. We got oil. These guys have been sliding now. They're down. I got them at 77.87, down 53 cents. They were over 82. Where are we on Tuesday? I'm going to say last Wednesday. So that's a $5. That's a, you know, that's a 7 or 8% move, you know, in a few days. Brent down 56 cents, 81.84. Natural gas down 5 cents, 220. RBOB down a penny, 245. Gold. We got a rally going on here today. Back up over 2,400. 2,407 up 1230. Silver down 14 cents, 29.18. I mentioned last week when silver got over 30, was it a sell again or not this time? In retrospect, it was a sell again. course, it's always easy to do that in retrospect. We have U.S. dollar 108.6 against the euro, so it was going down pretty hard. Now it's coming back up a little bit, so it's kind of in this mid-range. British pound 129, same thing. And we've got Bitcoin I lost my Bitcoin. It was down a little bit here. I'll get it back here. Why don't you give us traffic, weather, sports, and I'll come up with the Bitcoin.
For sure, Chief. Good morning. It's currently 7:39 a.m. here in Chicago. 71 degrees right now with a half 83 degrees. Clouds and sunshine with a stray thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy and humid with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm, mainly early. Storms can bring flooding downpours and localized damaging wind gusts with a low of 68 degrees. On a Phoenix, Arizona, 93 degrees right now with a high of 112. Mostly sunny and hot. A thunderstorm late this afternoon. And tonight will be very warm with increasing clouds with a low of 92 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 31 minutes inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 15 minutes inbound Edens from Lynn Cook, 36 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 33 minutes. Lastly, sports in the MLB. Yesterday, White Sox lose to the Rangers 4-3, Cubs beat the Brewers 3-1, and the Diamondbacks lose to the Royals 10-4. We got back-to-back matches yesterday and today. Cubs versus Brewers in Chicago at 7:05 p.m. White Sox versus Rangers in Arlington, Texas at 7:05 p.m. and Diamondbacks versus Royals in Kansas City at 7:10 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Professor, I have a question for you. Change topics a little bit because instead of trying to figure out how to kill people, which hopefully nobody does ever again. we got a thing from our buddy Mike Murphy that said, you know, the Secret Service lady is being vilified for not coming up with all these answers. And he, you know, and Mike was in Army Intelligence. He goes, you can't come up with those answers at a public hearing. You know, if they want to get her behind closed doors, that's a different story. But she can't answer those questions. I mean, no matter, even, you know.
Well, there were some questions she could have answered, right? I think she's trying to avoid a perjury trap, right? Because she's under oath. So I personally think she was being pretty slick.
Well, could very well be. But hey, my question to you is, I mean, we had Russell on last week, and Russell's been, out of all of us, I mean, he's been to China more than the rest of us combined, and he did a lot of work over there for their exchanges and so forth. And he's convinced that, you know, they're a total house of cards with the real estate and everything. And then you have, you know, Japan is kind of pumping some money into this system, and yet what's their debt is, I'm going to say, let me see if I can find them here in the world debt clock thing. Japan is, the national debt is 13 trillion, and their gross domestic product is 4.5. So their public debt to GDP ratio is 300%. Ours is, I don't know why ours isn't over 100, but we're close. I mean, national debt's 35 and our GDP is 29. So, to me, I think we're over it, but I don't know why they're doing. Evidently, some of the national debt is different groups in the government owing other groups, so it's not as high as it shows. Is that the story? Something like that. I'm not positive. But anyway, with these cities in China that nobody lives in, you have individual people with mortgages on places they're never going to live in, because the mortgage starts when you commit to the place, not when you take the keys to it, which is a little weird. I mean, how do you stay afloat when you're not? I mean, is it just nobody ever makes you, you know, mark your trades to market and see where you are, or you just keep winding along? I have a real weird concept of how that works necessarily.
Well, I think when every nation in the every central bank in the world, you know, they're all inflating. I think the Fed is still inflating. You look at M2. I'm sure we had that big bubble of money that was injected, you know, during the last part of the Trump administration and throughout the Biden administration. We had that big chunk of money that was just pushed through the system. You have all these countries that are still inflating, and I think the winner, or the one that loses the least amount, is going to be the central bank that maybe doesn't print as rapidly as the other nations. And, you know, it's just not sustainable. And I think that's one reason why Japan has been pretty stagnant. And, you know, the thing about China is ever since I read about the ghost cities that are in China where, you know, the governors are told to have GDP at 8%, and this idea that government spending should be a part of GDP, it to me is just mindless. I don't understand how government spending should be in GDP. But
well, if you're buying an aircraft carrier, you're paying $1 billion for the thing. I mean,
I know, but that goes back to the Secret Service. Should Kennedy continue to pay his private security $1.4 million, or pay $0, get Secret Service, and have the kind of service that Trump got? Right? It kind of goes back to that. You take from somebody, and then you spend the money. It's not your money. And when you're spending somebody else's money, you're never very careful with it. Look at Solyndra. Did we ever find out what happened to Solyndra? So the Chinese Communist Party is everything wrong with the United States Keynesian modern monetary theory experiment, but probably multiplied by a factor of 1,000, because there's no debate in China. There's nobody disciplined. There's no exchange of opinion. If you have a different opinion than the CCP, then you just walked out of the room. You know, in the United States, they post a letter, supposedly written by the president, signed by the president, on Twitter, and the guy's whisked away, right? But in China, they literally march the guy out of the CCP convention. They just march him out. On camera, right? So you don't have any debate in China. And they bought this whole Keynesian nonsense, this modern monetary theory nonsense. There's nobody pushing back there, because if they do, you know, they're going to be disappeared, right? In the United States, we still have debate. And so that pushes back on this nonsense.
How can anybody...
I think in the long run, we're going to be okay. I just do not at all fear anything from China. I just don't.
Well, you fear anybody who's wounded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do. But, you know, everything that they said about Japan or Saudi Arabia in the 1970s, all, you know, the movies in the 1970s had, you know, Saudi Arabia taking over the world, you know, in the future, right? They had these movies back then. And then it was Japan. And now all these scaremongers are saying China, 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 China.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you define take over the world. I mean, their influence. Their influence.
I just don't see it.
Their influence in politics in a lot of countries is way higher than if they didn't have any money.
Yeah.
I mean, who would let this guy who's running Saudi Arabia right now, who I'm going to say, I'll be American. I'm going to say he's alleged to have tortured how many people in the hospital, the hotel. When he got in,
yeah,
he seems to have had the
I think that's how things happen in Saudi Arabia, right?
Okay, but I'm not gonna.
I don't think there's anything new there.
I don't think you are either. You're not a moral relativist.
Yeah,
you know, because that's the way it happens there. It's okay, but I'm saying.
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm just saying that's kind of how.
Okay, but I'm saying that guy would have zero ability, if it wasn't for oil, to influence anything anywhere else in the world. And I think he has a lot of ability now to do that because of the money.
Yeah.
I mean, they were able to get out of Dodge after 9/11 because they had money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they managed to not
they
get...
They had powerful connections to the state, right?
Well, they were Bushy clones.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I won't say Bushy clones, but the Bushes were very tight to them.
Well, the same thing happened during the Boston Marathon bombing, right? There was this guy, Saudi prince son or something, kind of at the hospital. The next thing you know, he's back in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying in the training floor, money talks and BS walks, right?
Yeah.
By the way, when you talk about other people's money, it's OPM disease, according to the floor, training floor.
OPM? Yeah, other people's money, yeah.
Other people's money. But, you know, you wonder how this, you know, how much of this stuff is incompetency, how much is, but I'm kind of startled by how.
I don't think it's incompetence. I think it's the fact that, you know, these transactions are not being disciplined in the market. That's the problem, right? They're not being disciplined in the market. And so, you know, I always say that I've been saying this. I think I coined this phrase. I actually Googled it when I thought, you know, came up with it. I think I tweeted it on my first Twitter account, which is now gone. But government failures are, market failures are molehills next to the mountains of government failures. And all you got to do is look at the war during the 20th century, just the endless European wars, you know, millions and millions of people dead. And I think I came up with this saying when I read this professor from, I think, University of Hawaii, where he had documented how many murders or deaths that the governments were responsible for in the 20th century. And he did a communist versus kind of free Western world comparison.
Well, there were some people that were really into it. Who was the guy that was the worst back in the, was it the 17th? Ludwig of Belgium or somebody? How many guys did that guy knock off?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's your worst?
Coined the phrase, democide? Death by government?
Yeah, how would you rank him? I'd probably have Stalin number one, probably Pol Pot number two.
Mao's got to be up there,
and Hitler's up there. Those are probably the top four.
And then the Turks.
Yeah, well, how many Armenians did they kill?
Yeah. I think he had estimated it at 250 million people murdered at the hands.
I think he's probably spot on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Russians, I can't get over the just in terms of procreation, I'm stunned that the Germans lost, 15, 20 million people in World War One, and somehow 20 years later they were able to do it all over again? That's a science in sex of some kind. I mean, how the hell do you do that? All of a sudden all these people would do it all over again.
Maybe you subsidized fornication with...
They did, for God's sake, right?
The 20s in Germany were pretty wild, right?
Well, I'm talking about when Hitler came in. He had all the camps to go out and make Aryan babies.
There was quite a bit of debauchery in Germany in the 20s, right?
Oh, yeah.
There was quite a bit of it, yeah.
Well, I mean,
probably fueled by the inflation.
Well, I mean, I'm curious as to how, I got this when I first started, Hal, and I saw the rates at 12, 15%, and the rates started coming down, and the market was still going down, even though there was a turn that was pretty obvious to me. Now, of course, I was a year and a half early, which I always am. Now, this time, the market, this is what's, every time I hear one of these people, I use that term lightly, on TV talking about, God, the market just can't wait for this rate cut. It's been 3 years, and the market is going nothing up the whole time the rates went up. We got to be up 25% from when the rates started going.
Well, it's because the Fed is inflating.
Yeah. They're inflating as they're raising the rates, which is really kind of crazy.
Lending is still rising.
Yeah.
It's not increasing at the same pace it was pre-pandemic, but it's still rising.
You know,
M2 is accelerating.
Right? Here's kind of a, we don't have that much time, but this is a, we got enough time for this one. We got 9 minutes. There seems to be, I'm going to explain why I can't fathom this, Al, and then you tell me where I'm wrong. If you saw the money supply growth during the last year of the Trump years, well, you know, with the COVID, it went right with the COVID. It started in February of 2020.
I had it at 44%.
Yeah. I just did it yesterday, 46% on the total.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, 44, 46. But then, you know, some of that was the first year of this guy, of Biden, or the first few months anyway. Now, this happens. Now, question number one is when I was in grad school with the monetarists at the University of Chicago, it always was a six-month lag, but now their definition of you know, either goosing the money supply or pulling it back or moving interest rates type of thing, that I use the term monetary policy, was probably a percent or so, a percent or a percent and a half. And the lag time for it to kick in or kick out was always about 6 months. I mean, no student ever raised his hand and said, hey, Uncle Milt, or whoever the hell was teaching the class, what if some guy put in 40% in a year? What's the lead time on that? I don't think the question was ever even contemplated, much less asked. So in terms of, you know, the delay, I'm not so sure that still isn't percolating its way in. But that, you know,
it might be 12 months now because I think what happens
40%. I don't think it. I think it's at least 2.5 years because my Fed guys told me that it was just getting kicked back to the Fed. I mean, there was so much money they couldn't even absorb it. Yeah. It took
the money that leaks out in the form of leveraged stock purchases. I think that's where it happens, right? And so the people that get that money first are probably using leverage to buy stocks.
Right.
And then the people that get that money second are probably doing the same thing. The people that are getting it third are probably doing the same thing. So I think what's going on now is that money circulates amongst these very powerful, rich, elite traders through leverage. And the Fed has interest rate on reserves now, a new policy as of 2008. Wasn't supposed to be rolled out until 2010. That's how it kind of traps the newly printed money in the banking system, but it's leaking out through these leveraged purchases of.
Well, that's what that was going to be my follow up question. You anticipated like you always do, which is great. Even if now if you and I get in charge and we say, okay, look, we're not going to try and pull 10% of the money out of the system because that would be a problem that we couldn't really define. I mean, we're not going to do that. We're just going to keep it even. Well, if we try and keep it even, which I think they're having trouble doing because we're creeping back up again, still in your, to a certain extent in your futures area, but clearly in the stock area, there's this massive potential. And you know what you were mentioning, I will use the term, pull back a little bit on what you just said. It's not just the high end. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people. We don't have many clients like this, but we have some. And as a brokerage firm, somebody could open up an account tomorrow and do this, and you know we'd probably be happy. Even you know, if it was a nice account, a decent person, but somebody could drop 5,000 shares IBM in a PTI account tomorrow, and the next day say, "Hey guys, I want to buy another 2,000 shares IBM on margin." And oh, by the way, send me $300,000. I'm buying a house. We do it. I mean, it's your dough, right? And it's perfectly legal. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are we going to say no? You shouldn't buy a house. I mean, you're not even close to being maxed out on your margin. But the availability of funds, just from people's regular stocks account, is dramatic, and that's why you see the margin loans way up and everything like that. So my question is that almost like a secret source of M2 that nobody even contemplated? Because if all of a sudden the people we got you know a lot of people in stock here, like a real lot. If every one of them call up tomorrow. And said, "Hey, loan me 30% of my stuff. I'm going out and buying a house, or I'm buying more stock." God, that's millions of dollars into the flow in an instant, if it happened.
Let me ask you this question: when they do that, they're borrowing it, so they don't have to pay a capital gains.
No,
they're not selling.
No,
shares,
they're just
right?
borrowing. They're just borrowing.
Yeah. So that's kind of sets up a perverse incentive, right?
Well, I mean, you're if you buy, I mean, look at it. If you want to buy IBM, I always use IBM because that's what we used to use back when it was the only stock that it's $184. Okay, if you want to buy 1,000 shares, if you wanted to, I mean, we would certainly encourage you to do a little bit better. You could send us a check for $92,000. You can borrow 50% on day one. It's called your initial margin. Mm. Now, after that, the thing that's changed after 1929, it used to be on the security side, and by the way, still is on the future side. That if IBM were to drop like $5 today, well, now guess what? You don't have 50% down anymore, do you?
Yeah.
Because your equity is now.
Then you're called.
Well, right? No, your equity is 87 because you're down 5, right? You started with 92.
Don't you have to cover that though?
Well, no, you don't. That's my point. The maintenance margin is 30%.
Oh wow.
So you're not causing everybody to sell everything, and that's what happened in 1929. It was one-to-one margin, so you got the call all day long. Now, if in the futures side, it's still like that. So if we also do futures stuff. So if you call up and say, "Hey, I want to buy, you know, a corn contract, which is 5,000 bushels, and corn's trading for, let's say it's $5. They used to call it margin. Now it's called a good faith deposit. How's that for a load of BS?
Well, the margin has a negative connotation, so you got to erase that word, right?
Right. Well, so but let's go back to the old term. The margin's $2,000. All right. So you got 5,000 bushels. So if it goes down a dime, what? You're down $500, right?
Yeah.
Well, now the margin is $2,000, but guess what? You only got $1,500. So it's 1-to-1. I'm calling up, hey, Hal, we better get a wire here pretty damn quick tomorrow or we're going to have to sell this.
Yeah.
So on the future side, it still works that way. On the security side, the initial margin is 50 and the maintenance margin is 30. But if you said, I'm opening up an account and I'm going to drop in 1,000 shares of IBM, you got, and then, so that's $184,000. If you call up tomorrow and say, I want to buy $50,000 worth of Honeywell, which is the one above it in the Dow here, just why I'm picking them, we do it.
Yeah.
So now you have a $50,000 margin loan, and now you've got your Honeywell.
How many of those transactions involve Bitcoin?
We don't do that, but some people.
But I mean,
yeah. Well, that's
other.
Well, that's
other houses.
That's sort of interesting, because you may have been the only one goofy enough in the world other than me to read the history of the tulips, the tulip fiasco in Holland, right? Well. When people just bought tulips, okay, and you say you paid $5,000 for a tulip and all of a sudden it was worth $2,000, guess what? I'm down $3,000, but I really haven't, other than flagellating myself, I really haven't done any damage, right? But whenever, but as this goes onward, tulips became traded on the exchanges, and here, you know, wait for it, they became marginable. So you could borrow money to buy the tulips. Therein lies the danger. Because now if I paid $5,000 for the tulip and I only put up one and the tulip starts to go down, the clearing firm says, or whoever the hell it was in those days, hey, Joe, hey, Chief, you better sell that damn thing because now you're into our money. So that's the problem with the margin debt. It becomes forced selling. If there wasn't any.
And therein lies the perverse incentive for the Fed to create a perpetual inflation, right?
Oh, that's right. So that's why you always hear me say, the market goes up 20%, it goes down 20%, more money's lost on the way down than was made on the way up.
Yeah.
And people look at me and say, what are you talking about? It's because people incur loans as it goes up, and when it goes down now, they lose more than just that percentage of the stock price.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody. If you look at you could never do this, we'd never let you. If you looked at all the PTI clients, we have very, very few people like that. But all these other places, I mean, if they want to buy 1,000 shares of this, they're sending you a check for 500. I mean, the margin loans are dramatic. They're like $800 billion, right?
Yeah. Hey, Tom, I got a question for you.
Right.
Before we go. Instead of maybe changing the 50% to maybe 20% or something on the margin.
Well, you bury everything.
And then... If you wanted M2 to say you're the Fed and you wanted M2 to grow by 6% and lowering these margin thresholds from 50% to 20%, maybe that only increases M2, say, 1% or 2%. Well, I mean, this is kind of radical thinking. If the Fed is going to create inflation, right, it can dial down those thresholds and then just deposit, like, money into every American's account directly, right? It can just actually deposit the money to achieve the 6% growth.
Well, until
that's pretty radical, right?
Yeah, but until somebody takes the loan, we'll talk about this next week because we really should probably go through it again how money is actually created. If your IBM is sitting here at PTI, if you go and borrow $30,000 against it and then put it in, you know, Chase Bank, now it's a deposit. Now it's
no. What I'm saying is,
money.
The Fed, when it's printing this money, it should just print the money by digitizing people, everyday Americans' checking accounts or savings accounts. It should just digitize it into their account.
Okay, but I guess what we need to talk about at length next week is if somebody does that. Okay, say the Fed wants to keep the money supply constant, right? Because we've had too much inflation. They want to keep it constant. If 10 PTI people call up and all borrow $50,000 out of their account and put it in their bank accounts, that's now $500,000 that's entered the system. If the Fed wants to do their job right, they now have to withdraw $500,000 just to keep it even. They have to fight the other way because it's being recreated by people. That's our system.
Yeah.
If you go get a loan out of a bank and put it in your own checking account, you just created money, right?
Yeah. Well, But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Let's kick it around at length next week, because I mean, I think the not understanding how this all works, and it's pretty damn complicated, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But we'll go through it slow. S&P futures down 1, NASDAQ futures down 30. Everybody's all fired up now for next week. We'll hear about monetary theory. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks. Nice job, Ricardo, as usual.
That's all, folks.